Welcome to Sideline Judgment. My name is Sergio.
My name is Tyler.
And today we are joined once again by our official World Cup correspondent, Mr. Zach Gowdy. How you doing, Zach?
What's up? I'm good.
Now, before we go any further, I need to address something. I was called out by my stepdad, Raul, friend of the pod, person who's been on before. And he told me to tell you, Zach, that when you said that the Cavani-Suarez goal in the quarterfinals, that was no luck, that was a training ground practice. That was something that was prepared, and not training ground practice, but that was something that was determined a lot of skill. And I went back and I watched it, and I got to go with my stepdad on there, Zach. I got to disagree with you on that. Suarez with the nasty chip diagonal to the back post, and Suarez with a clinical header to finish, or with a clinical right foot to put it past the keeper. So I want to give you a chance right here to redeem yourself. I know I ambushed you. I didn't tell you about this before we started recording. But I just had to address it because I've talked to my stepdad a few times in the past few days. And he said, what are you doing? You gotta straighten that up. So I'm going to give you a chance to go ahead and explain yourself, my boy.
All right. First of all, let me explain myself. Okay, so what I was saying was the fact that when you look at Suarez in that play, he's completely by himself.
Yes.
Right? Yes. And then
for the record, we're talking about the first Uruguay goal in the quarterfinals against Russia, against Portugal. Thank you, Tyler. Look at you all soccered, Tyler.
On an island, right? No one by him. He ducks in. He sees Cavani on the run. Cavani's going for it. He crosses the ball in, and the ball hits off Cavani's face. It wasn't a header, it was off his face. And so because of that, I felt that it wasn't really a training ground move. It was he ducked in, he looked up because he had nobody left, and he did give a great ball, but I felt that There was no real communication between the two of them as to where they were going to be.
Okay.
It looked rushed. It didn't look like he sat there. I mean, it didn't look like Jesse Lingard and Dele Alli's goal for England versus Sweden.
Okay, now that, my friend, is that is how you transition to Zach. That is how you transition, my dog.
That's what I was saying. So that's why I felt that, like, it looked like luck. It looked like a practice play. It didn't look like Suarez knew Cavani was gonna come down that wing.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
I'm gonna disagree with you, but I see where you come from, Zach. I'm not gonna discredit that. I see where you come from. I can see where you can come to that conclusion. But my man brought up Jesse Lingard. And so with that, we are going to go ahead and transition to the meat and potatoes of this show. The English breakfast, as they may say, of the show. And speak on reviewing. We're going to go ahead and review the quarterfinals, and then we're going to go ahead and preview the semifinals, because we're getting into some important and critical soccer. I'm kind of – can we take a moment and take a back seat real quick and just – it's almost over.
Yeah.
I waited 4 years for this, and now I'm sitting here. I got what? I got one, two.
How do you guys do this?
Tyler, we watch club soccer. Tyler, I watch the Premier League. I watch La Liga. I watch MLS. I watch Serie A. I watch the Bundesliga. I watch the Champions League, the Europa League. There's tons of soccer. Tyler, I think soccer is the one sport that is literally played somewhere across the globe at least 350 out of the 365 days in the year.
There is no real off-season for soccer as a sport.
There is no off-season for soccer.
Well, I mean, what's helped is I've already committed to being a Fulham fan from now on.
That's right. Did you not know this? Did you not know this, Zach?
No.
Tyler, go ahead and explain to Zach why.
So I'm trying to pick, like, as I'm getting into soccer, I'm trying to pick a team. And Fulham FC is owned by Shad Khan, who is the owner of the Jacksonville Jaguars.
Ah.
And they just got promoted this last offseason. So I feel as good a time as any.
Yeah, they won the promotion playoff.
Yeah, that's a good team.
I mean, take it.
I don't know anything about them, but I follow them on Twitter now, so I'm on my way to be a good fan.
Well, Tyler, when we get closer to the season, closer to the Premier League season, which starts in 32 days. I looked it up today. It starts in 32 days. But we're not talking about club soccer right now, Tyler. We will deal with that after the World Cup. We have four more games to watch for the World Cup, three important ones and the third place game. And let's go ahead and start with the quarterfinals. I'm going to go ahead and run through the scores, and then like last week, we will go ahead and talk about our takeaways from the quarterfinal stage. Our first game that was up was Uruguay against France, and France won that game 2-0. Then we had Brazil and Belgium won 2-1. We then had Sweden and England, which was won by England 2-0. And then we had Russia and Croatia that finished 2-2 with Croatia advancing on penalties 4-3. I'm going to go ahead and start with Zach, our wonderful guest of the show, friend of the pod. Zach, what was your big takeaway from the quarterfinal stage?
Defense.
Now, defense, defending set pieces, as one Sergio would like to point out.
Defending in open play.
Okay.
I think I'm going to say this. I don't think anybody has an answer for England's set plays and set pieces. I don't think anyone has an answer for that. But in terms of in the run of play, defense was a huge part of that quarterfinal stage.
Now, the importance of defending or the lack of defending?
The struggle of defending. Like, okay. I feel like every team put in a pretty awesome defensive performance. I mean, bar Sweden, I guess, but I think every team, it was a tough way to go. I mean, Uruguay had a great defense at the start of the game, but I mean, France is the strongest squad. Sweden, it was built as a strong defensive team, and they sat and they made England work for it. But England had a very solid performance all throughout. Mm-hmm. And then Croatia-Russia was just a bloodbath, really. And
that's a way to put it.
That was a tough defensive game. Mm-hmm. And I mean, for the hosts to go out the way they did, that sucks. But, you know, that's just the nature of football.
Let's also realize here that Russia was arguably the worst team in this tournament, and they made it to the quarterfinals. As the host, they rode the tail waves of being the host. And congratulations to that team for representing their country. Take apart any political things that you may have or whatever. What they did was they showed up and they represented their country honorably in a very well way. So before we move on, just shout out Russia to that team for giving a country hope, which is what soccer is supposed to be about. But optimism and hope and camaraderie. So go ahead, Zach, continue. I just wanted to emphasize that before we move forward.
No, I agree with you. I think as a host nation, to be such underdogs and then to do all of that and after all the adversity of every single game still coming out on top.
They weren't even predicted to win their group, to move on from the group.
It was just a fantastic performance by the Russians. And honestly, I was really pulling for the Russians to come out of that game with Croatia. But, I mean, Croatia's a tough team, man. I just think every team put in a very – it was a solid quarterfinal. I feel like they were just solid performances. There was nothing too audacious. I mean, Sheryachev's goal was probably the most
a banger
audacious goal I think I saw, but I think every other goal was like, and maybe Griezmann's.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
it was just solid performances across the board. I think every team was really into their defense, so I would say defense.
Okay, so Zach's big takeaway is the defenses in the quarterfinals. Tyler, do you have a takeaway?
I mean, I kind of do. I agree with Zach that, like, a big thing for me watching this is just defense. But to me, and it's going to sound weird when I say this, but it's kind of like, it's kind of seeing underdogs like succeed in the sense of like, I don't want to call, like, it's hard to call Belgium and Croatia underdogs because they're one of the two better teams entering. They were one of the two better teams entering the tournament, mm-hmm. from what I heard.
Well, I wouldn't call either of them underdogs, but yes, in this specific matchup.
I mean, so here's the thing. It's not with Belgium's, in Belgium's case, yes, they're underdogs. I'm talking about how it's kind of more of a historical thing.
Oh, okay.
To see that these are underdog nations.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
is what I'm getting at. So
I'm gonna hit the pause button on there for you. And I saw a stat that said this is the first World Cup that doesn't include Argentina, Brazil, or Germany in the semifinals ever.
Yeah,
ever. Every other World Cup has had at least one of those three teams in the semifinals.
And that's kind of what I'm hitting at. And that's great. I didn't even know that stat. That's an amazing stat. Mm-hmm. It's just kind of like these. It's one of those weird things when it's like these are underdog nations. You aren't seeing those other kind of nations in the semis, but it's cool. It's weird because they're historically underdogs, but these are really good teams. Mm-hmm. They're not underdog teams. And then in another sense, like we were just talking about, Russia was the ultimate underdog. They were largely considered the worst team in the tournament. Mm-hmm. And yet they made it to the quarterfinals. So like, that's kind of the whole thing, is like historical underdogs making it this far. Is really interesting. It's really interesting to see, and making it this far, not quite on just, you know, fluke plays. Like Croatia and Belgium are really good teams.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, I'd have to agree with that. My takeaway from the quarterfinals, it's got a couple parts to it, but I'm gonna go ahead and start off with Roberto Martinez, the manager for the Belgian national team. If there was ever a moment where a manager needed to get their tactics right, it was in this game. They're going up against the perennial favorite, Brazil, who had, since they're eliminated, the, on paper, hands-down best team in the tournament. There's another argument you can say for France and their youth and their just their sheer talent-wise, but I feel like Brazil, people focus a lot on Brazil's attacking talent, but before yesterday, they'd only given up 9 goals total over the past 2.5 years. They lost 2 games over the past 2.5 years. Like, this is a team that is, it's a good team. You know, they're top to bottom, not just in their attacking talent. So for Belgium to come out, Roberto Martinez to look at the tactics and say, okay, this is what Brazil do. This is how they play. We have 3 center backs in the back. Let's go to a back 4. And let's take out Dier Mertens and put Kevin De Bruyne in a false 9. And for those who don't know what a false 9 is, it's when typically the positions are numbered. So for instance, a striker is a number 9, is what you'll hear it said as. A false 9, a number 9 typically stands, imagine them being inside of the opponent's box. A false 9 drips further back into the field and makes runs from behind the defenders rather than standing at the defensive line, in order to draw the center backs in to provide more space. You following me, guys? That's what the false 9 does. So they implemented Kevin De Bruyne, one of the greatest playmakers and top 5 players in the world, into that false 9 spot, and they decided to play on the counter. They knew that Brazil was going to attack and attack and attack. And the way you can beat South American teams is to frustrate them. That's how South American teams beat European teams. Well, European teams, when they fight back, South American teams don't really know what to do. We call it, in North America, we call it CONCACAFing, which is just being rough, throwing the extra elbow, giving that extra little push, holding the jersey. In South America, it's just the way that it's played. It's often been said in my family, when we look at things, when the ref's not, well, now with VAR, you can't do it, but when the ref's not looking, you pull the shirt down a little, you frustrate the player, you try to get a couple cards out of them and give your team the advantage. So when Belgium decided to sit back, be a structure, be a wall, and retain forces and hit them on the counter, I feel like that wasn't something that people thought was going to happen. Belgium is such an attacking team. They play a 3-5-2 with 2 wingbacks. To draw away from that and to come in and to make that tactical change, my hat, my coat, my shoes, everything is off to Roberto Martinez for that tactical switch. And Brazil didn't know what to do with it. You know, Brazil, like we said before in this tournament, remember when I said when teams go and attack Brazil is when they're most deadly. And what happened with Mexico? They held them for the first half, and then when Mexico decided we have to go out and we have to win the game because we only play one style, we're going to attack, attack, attack. Brazil said, perfect, come, 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 boom, 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 four passes, goal. And that's how they beat them. But Belgium didn't fall into that trap. Belgium said, no, we're going to sit back, we're going to frustrate you, and we're going to counterattack you because we have Kevin De Bruyne, we have Eden Hazard, we have Romelu Lukaku. We have these players that can play in that system. Another takeaway, Eden Hazard played one of the best games that I have seen a central midfielder play in my lifetime. If my kid, boy or girl, says, I want to play center midfield, I'm going to run the tape back and say, this is how you play in a counterattacking style. As a center midfielder, he had 10 successful dribbles. He would pick up the ball and just dribble out and force the Brazilian midfielders and the Brazilian defenders to track back and completely take the air out of their counterattack. Hats off to Eden Hazard as well for being critical in that victory. I also have a takeaway where I feel like the teams that are left are about either a golden generation or about the youth. You look at Belgium and you look at Croatia, and they're riding the final coattails of this golden generation. You have, for Belgium, you have Lukaku, Hazard, De Bruyne, Kompany, Vermaelen, Dier Mertens, Fellaini. You have tons of these players towards the end of their prime, not their careers, but towards the end of their prime. And then on Croatia, you have Luka Modric and Ivan Rakitic. You have these players that are towards the end of their prime, if not in the height of their prime. And these teams are making the most of it. On the other side, you have France and you have England. France is young. Paul Pogba's 24. Antoine Griezmann's 26. N'Golo Kante's 24. Like, these players will be around for a long, long time. Kylian Mbappe, we all know, is 19. The oldest guy there is Olivier Giroud, and he's 29, guys. Like, the oldest of the starters. Like, these guys are, they're not, people think that they're these players that have been playing for years and years and years. They're not. They're just really talented, and they're really young. So they can run, they can adapt to things easier. I find the dichotomy to be outstanding. In both games, we're going to see kind of golden generation go up against hopeful youth. So I'm very excited about that. So those are my takeaways. Russia, Croatia. We talked about Russia in their way. Sweden, hats off to Sweden because they played their style. England was just better. You know, they went out kind of like how I died upon multiple for my takes. Sweden died going out playing counterattack, and England just found a way to break them up. Uruguay, France.
I died on a hill this in the quarterfinal.
Yes, you did, and we will get to that in a moment. I'm just going to go ahead and finish wrapping up these. Uruguay and France. The scoreline says 2-0, but in the first half, it was very much Uruguay's game. It was more of a... If Diego Godin finishes that chance at the end of the first half, you're going in 1-1. The pressure mounts on Deschamps. I think it's a completely different game. Also, shout out to Suarez for being a one-man high press again. Does not get the defensive credit that he deserves. Did an outstanding job being a one-man high press, being that number nine that can go ahead and pressure those center backs to force them to play out of the back. What else in these quarterfinals that we could talk about? I know you want to talk about your three Lions, Zach.
No, I was just about to say, I think with that Uruguay game, that really all comes down to the fact that Cavani wasn't there.
I agree. Cavani would have made such a big difference.
Cavani would have made a huge difference to that team.
I feel for him too, man.
And I think that with Suarez was really doing all that he could. Mm-hmm. However, you bring up Godin, and Godin was an absolute beast on the defense. That defensive line was high.
And Jimenez.
It was beautiful to watch.
Yeah. A true captain.
True captain. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I feel for Uruguay because they do things the right way. You know? They structure their team properly. Their players play good soccer. They have that captain and stuff, and it's always just not enough.
But I think it comes down to, like you're saying, is youth. I think that's what this World Cup has shown. It's like football's so quick now that you need young kids. You need to develop these young kids to come in and you know, bring home chips. So,
I'm with you on that, man.
And you know, like, Belgium's just scary, I think. And, like, you brought up Roberto Martinez, and I never even thought he'd be as great a coach as he's become.
Well, he had a good year at Everton where they finished fourth or third or fifth. But since then, it wasn't anything. Like, he hasn't done anything.
He converted Wigan into a scary team back in, like, 06, maybe 08.
Yeah, they went up. They got promoted.
But, like, you just didn't see him having that kind of potential or that kind of brain to pick apart a team like Brazil. But, again, I think the unsung hero of that game is Lukaku. I think after you had the discussion about Lukaku making that dummy run in the last game, I actually sat there just watching him, watching how he played, and he's a huge reason why this Belgian team is where they're at right now.
Yeah.
The guy never stops running. And for you to be a number nine, he's like, what, 206?
Mm-hmm.
6'3", 206 maybe? Maybe even more than that? And he's just booking it every game.
He is what I want Jozy Altidore to be. He's what I want Jozy. I feel like if Jozy didn't have the injuries and spent more time in the Eredivisie and in Europe and stuff and had another chance at a Premier League club, I think he could have become that. But yeah, no, Lukaku to me, Lukaku and Harry Kane are the ideal strikers, but they're different strikers, and that's okay. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I think Lukaku's now realized that I have pace.
Mm-hmm. And body.
I think at the start of his campaign with Man U, he was very much a strength player.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a build-up player. So I'm going to lock down the center back to pass back to the midfielders and make a run through the defensive line to score a goal. And as great as that is, that's fantastic. But I think now he realizes that I'm a power player. I can, one, push the center back off me, but I can also beat him and the right back and the left back if I want to.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I can come on the ring and I can cross it. And it's scary because I feel that with Thierry Henry's coaching,
he's Thierry Henry is an assistant for the strikers on that Belgian team. You're very right. That's a good point.
I think that's what's happening. He's now tapping into that Henry mentality that, you, as a striker, you don't have to play down the middle all the time.
Mm-hmm.
That you can come from the wings if you want to. Right. But it depends on what the coach wants you to play. You know, mm-hmm. Arsene Wenger gave Thierry full license to roam around and do whatever he wanted to do on the football
pitch. And it looks like
Roberto Martinez is just like that. He's like, my players do what they got to do. I think that's why Kevin De Bruyne was such a star in this game. Because I agree. Kevin De Bruyne doesn't get to play that way for Man City.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's his position. He should be a false nine, a cam, in the middle, center attacking midfielder. That's his pocket.
Right. So, well, that's, and then that goes into a whole other tactical discussion in terms of what Guardiola likes to do. So it does, while yes, that may be his best position truly, he may not fit that. That may not fit the Guardiola style of play.
But that's the discussion that's what I'm trying to talk about is the fact that I think a lot of these players are now discovering their best place to play.
Mm-hmm.
And you have two coaches in Guardiola and Mourinho who are very concrete in where they like to put their players and how the roles their players are supposed to have. So I think that this World Cup tournament has been incredibly productive for Lukaku. I think that with Thierry's coaching, he's figured out how to be a monster. Mm-hmm. And excited for next season because I think he's going to bring that back with him. Because he now realizes that he can beat defenders if he wants to. Any given night, he could outrun anyone if he wanted to.
Yeah.
And with such a big frame and a big body, if he can knock people off and still keep his composure to finish the shot, then he'll be unstoppable next season. Mm-hmm. So
now, that another player that doesn't get that kind of recognition and respect for what they do on the ball is Raheem Sterling, who has not been scoring, who has not scored yet in the World Cup, plays next to Harry Kane in that 3-5-2 that England plays. But honestly, I think is England's most important player if you watch what he does off the ball.
Yeah, I don't know much about like soccer. Like again, I don't know much about the tactics of soccer, but it seemed to me that as much as he wasn't scoring, like he was constantly getting behind.
Yes.
Sweden.
Yes, he was getting behind Sweden. He was pulling defenders forward so that other players could make runs above. He was finding open players. He was basically making the Swedish defense have a nightmare. You know, yeah. And there's this big, we all know the tabloid obsession with the hatred of Raheem Sterling over across the pond. But I really respect Gareth Southgate for saying, no, he's doing what I've told him to do. He may not be scoring goals. Granted, that one chance in the first half that he should have put away does not help his hater. You know, it doesn't help his chances with those haters. But he's doing what he's supposed to be doing, you know?
I'll be honest and say that I've been pretty critical of Raheem Sterling watching the games because personally I feel that he's out of position. That's not his natural position.
He's more a winger rather than a second striker.
He's a winger than a second striker. So him playing up front for me, I know that Gareth is just looking to use him solely because of his pace. Mm-hmm. That's the reason why he's there. However, personally, I feel like I'd prefer another striker like Rashford or Jamie Vardy up front to support Harry Kane. But watching that game again, you are right. And a bunch of other people I've listened to talk about Raheem Sterling are right in the fact that he's there to just cause havoc and pain.
He's there to take the pressure off of Harry Kane.
Harry Kane, so that Harry Kane can find a pocket because Harry Kane's not exactly the fastest striker out there.
He's faster than you think, but he's not crazy fast.
Yeah, he's not crazy fast. So, but what he's a poacher. And so if Harry Kane can sit in a pocket and wait for the ball to come in and just be quicker than everybody else, he will score. Mm-hmm. So I think that with Sterling, his role is just to, you know, pull the center backs, create attention, distract them. Mm-hmm. And then I think that also now has opened up room for Jesse Lingard, who I think is
actually... Who's having an amazing tournament.
Pretty scary kid right now. And I'm hugely critical of him for his play at United. But he's putting in work right now. And I think he's got a lot of freedom to roam and do whatever. He's really linking up the defense and the midfield together. Mm-hmm. And so... I think that England team is pretty solid going forward.
Yeah, so. I'd have to agree. But yeah, I want nothing more in this tournament than for if England can make it past Croatia and make it to the final, and I want nothing more than Raheem Sterling to score the game-winning goal in a World Cup final and bring it home. Because I feel for the man. I want the man, like, he's underappreciated, and not only is he underappreciated, but there are racial undertones in the aggression and the hatred towards him with some of the English media, you know? So that I want nothing more than him to have a good to score a goal, even though I think he has been one of the most important players for the Three Lions this tournament. All right, but let's go ahead and move forward to the semifinals. We have two important games. We're going to start with tomorrow's game. We're recording on Monday night. So tomorrow, 2 p.m., July 10th, we have France versus Belgium. Gentlemen, I'm going to go ahead and defer to you two. Who you got? Zach, who you got?
Oh, my gosh. This is hard. Mm-hmm. I think...
What you think? What you think? What are you thinking? Talk us through it. Talk us through it.
Okay, so my head says France.
Okay.
But my heart thinks Belgium.
Really?
And I'll say this because I think that French team is absolutely solid defensively. Mm-hmm. I think from top to bottom, that team is solid defensively. And I think that they're one of the best examples of turning defense into offense. They do it every night. And Kante is a rock. Pogba's been incredible linking up in the middle of the field. And then their attack up front with Griezmann and Mbappe on the sides. They got Giroud just lingering in the middle. And their defense is hard too. Varane, Umtiti, Mendy. So like logically, I'm thinking France, right? Mm-hmm. However, Belgium squad is scary. And we haven't even talked about like Tielemans off the bench. You got Mertens, who now I think will probably sit out considering how well they played
depends,
last time.
It depends on what Martinez wants to do in this game.
I think with Martinez being such a tactician right now, he's going to pick the best squad for that game. Fellaini won, I think, like 7 aerial battles.
Coming off the bench. He can come off the bench and cause havoc.
Start, too. So if Fellaini started in the middle, that wouldn't be too bad. I think that Belgium offense is going to be quick. It's going to be scary fast. And I wonder if France are going to be able to handle it. And I'm rooting for that Belgium squad because I just think that they're best suited to go up against this French side, or at least just like challenge this French side. I don't think other teams have really been able to. But I'm going to go with France.
Okay.
I expect them to come out.
That's great logic. That's a great way of reasoning, talking it out. I like that. Tyler, who do you have, man?
Similar thing as Zach in the sense that like it's just very hard to pick these two teams. France, I picked France kind of all the way through the round of 16 quarterfinal. They've looked so good, but Belgium has also looked really good. Mm-hmm. And it's tough as Zach broke it down. And what you guys have described to me is that. Like as France turns defense and offense, but Belgium is one of the more aggressive and one of the better attacking teams that are out there. So it's a good matchup in that sense, and for I think the viewer at least,
as a neutral, yeah.
Yeah, but well, like yeah, the strengths play into each other.
Yeah.
So I think it could be interesting to watch. I think I'm gonna go with Belgium.
Mm-hmm.
Both teams have looked really impressive. But I've said before, this is kind of—I don't really have the strategy to back this up. But this Belgium team is feeling like a team of destiny.
Here's where I get into it. Zach, you said that your heart was telling you France, but or your head was telling you France, but your heart was telling you Belgium.
Yeah.
I think I'm the opposite. Now, simply because of what I saw from Belgium tactically in that game against Brazil. And as everyone knows, I had Brazil winning the entire World Cup. I truly was surprised at how well defensive they were. Now, can they do it again against a team that has more pace? I anticipate Blas Matuidi to come back in. So, I expect their midfielder and attackers to be Conte and Pogba in the two, bank of two in front of the defenders, Griezmann to sit in the number 10 attacking mid role, and have Mbappe on the right, I believe, and then Matuidi on the left with Giroud up top. So, and then also what happens is Pogba can drift out to the right-hand side behind Mbappe, kind of overpower that. But I think I've talked myself into it. I'm gonna go with France. I've talked myself into France. I thought Belgium. I did. I just talked myself into it. I can just picture. Listen.
That's what I'm saying. That's the hard part about this matchup, mm-hmm. because all signs are pointing that France should possibly probably come out of this. Mm-hmm. But that Belgian team is so good, and we've been proved wrong so many times before with these predictions in this World Cup that, you know, Belgium could...
I really don't think you can predict anything in this World Cup.
Anything...
correctly.
It's scary how anything is completely possible. I mean, I would have been with you thinking that maybe Brazil would have went all the way. Germany, I definitely expected to be pulling harder. I expected Portugal really to come up strong. So, you know, but I just think that France squad is just solid from all areas. The one area that I think is weak is probably Giroud up front, but Giroud's supposed to be just an aerial threat.
But Giroud's been playing really well off of the bank of three. He's been playing connecting plays with Mbappe when he comes on the right side. He's been playing well with Matuidi when Matuidi... and here's the thing with that France team. Okay, let's say Matuidi doesn't start. All right, you're going to throw Thomas Lemar on the left. Wait, was something... God forbid, because I don't want... none of us want that. But God forbid something happens to Mbappe. Who do you have coming off the bench? Fakir, Thomas Lemar, Ousmane Dembele. Bro, like, you have pace.
I'm sorry.
It's not Mbappe pace, but you got pace.
Pace.
King Killian, bro. That's our boy. The Velociraptor. I can't bet against it, man. I've talked myself into it. I've talked myself into France. So we got Zach and I are going to go with France. Tyler's going to go with his so-called team of destiny, Belgium. We're going to go ahead and...
Let me just say it like this. If Mbappe is a Velociraptor, he's a dinosaur.
Mm-hmm.
Belgium, that team of destiny,
is the asteroid. Good lord,
the asteroid that's going to come down. It's destiny.
Can we continue?
I'm just working myself into these metaphors.
No, you know what is destiny?
It's going to be a hand of God.
No. You know what is destiny, Tyler?
What?
The fact that it's coming home, because that
it feels like it.
It feels like it. Croatia, England, Wednesday, 2 p.m. Oh man. Gentlemen, who you got?
I mean, you know who I got.
Okay, why do you have the three Lions?
Other than complete bias homers.
Other than your blood.
Other than my blood. I think that we have a stronger attack than Croatia.
Agreed.
However, the battle's going to be in the midfield. Mm-hmm. That's where it's all going to go down, is in the midfield. And I don't think England are well set up in the midfield to disrupt Croatia. I don't. I think that John Stones and Harry Maguire can take down Mandzukic up front. I think that's mm-hmm. clear. I think they can defend all day. I just think that Rakitic and Modric in the midfield... If they start linking things together, it could be a long night for England. Mm-hmm. But I think that in terms of our wing play with Ashley Young and Trippier, I think with Harry Kane up front and Sterling together, I think John Henderson's put in a fantastic few performances of late. And then you still got Eric Dyer coming off the bench mm-hmm. to sit in that mm-hmm. CDM role. I think that if we're comparing Jordan Henderson to Rakitic and Modric, I think they, you know, it's not a fair fight in the
midfield.
Don't sleep
on Jordan Henderson, though.
I'm not trying to, but I just...
That man plays a defensive midfield role excellently.
Modric was so amazing in the quarterfinal. Like, he just got better as the game went on.
Yeah, he did.
It was weird because that game was so, like... hard on all the players' bodies, been injured left and right, and it seemed as the game went on, he just got better and stronger. So, just to add to your indecision.
Right.
Yeah, but as you just pointed out, Tyler, they're tired.
That's true.
The team is tired. Like, I watched the whole game, and legs were falling off by the end of extra time. Like, penalties was just a tough ordeal for both teams.
Yeah.
So, yeah. I'm
back. Even worse is that they were the last game.
Yeah, yeah. Well, but it was the same day as England, and they're going to...
Yeah, but England had a much easier game.
Oh, 100%.
Much easier game compared to Croatia. England didn't fight that hard through Sweden. Mm-hmm. Croatia did. So I think that fatigue might play into it, and I'm hoping it does. So that's why I have England, but I honestly think that the battle's going to be in the midfield. And I think that if Jordan Henderson can disrupt Modric and Rakitic's play, then England will be fine. I trust our defensive three. I think they're fantastic. I think that Trippier has been an unsung hero with his crosses. And again, our set pieces are so ridiculous. I don't think any team has a formula to beat it. Mm-hmm. So that's why I have England.
Tyler?
Yeah. So I'm not going to do what I did last week and predict an outlandish Croatia 3-0. For anyone who doesn't know, I predicted Croatia would win 3-0 against Russia. I was very wrong.
Very wrong.
And in result, Zach no longer has to name his firstborn son after me. So just get that out of the way. Anyway, I think this will be a tough game. I'm going to go England because England's really good. And as Zach described it, their set pieces, I don't think anyone can defend that. But a lot of that is like, not only did Croatia tired from winning that last game against Russia on penalties, they also won the previous game against Denmark on penalties.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They basically played, they played almost another full game in a way.
Yeah.
Like in two games, they've all played almost three. Mm-hmm. And so it's kind of, I mean, if you want to go with body blow theory, it's going to be tough for them, like you said. I think I'm going to have to go with England. It is going to be a tough game. I think both of these semis are going to be tough, but I'm going to go with England.
Gentlemen, I have three words. It's coming home. I truly believe that. This England team.
Come in.
No, you have to watch. You have to watch the videos of the England fans in England singing the song. It's great.
I can't wait.
But I think England. I disagree with you, Zach. I think Henderson can play that role, and I think Lingard and Sterling
couldn't. I think he can. I just think he's going to be tough for him.
I agree, but I think he'll get it done. Like, I have full confidence in Jordan Henderson. Jordan Henderson played in the Champions League final and defended outstanding for the entire game against Real Madrid, against, you know, seen as the holy grail of soccer.
He put in a fantastic performance against Sweden as well. So, mm-hmm. I mean, I think he can. He has to win that battle.
Yes, he does.
Will be the reason.
Yeah. So he, to me, is the key there, just like you. I think he'll get it done. If they're set pieces, I think England has the advantage there. I really want Raheem Sterling to shut people up going into the final if they win. I don't want there to be this cloud over Raheem Sterling's head heading into Sunday if they win on Wednesday. For the final. Like, I don't want that to happen. I want Raheem to be free of all burdens, which I think his team is behind him and his coach is his manager's behind him, so there's no problem there. But I'm going to go with England. And hopefully we see... I think we're going to see a very great competitive final regardless of what happens. So, to recap... Tyler has Belgium and England. Zach has France and England. And I also have France and England. Gentlemen, I think we can put a bookmark in this and reconvene on Wednesday or Thursday and preview the final and review these semifinal games. How does that sound?
Yep.
Sounds good to me. Sounds good. I can't believe there's only four games left.
I'm upset. I'm so upset. Bruh. I woke up this morning and I was just upset because I couldn't watch any FIFA World Cup matches. It's so sad.
I saw there was a really funny SB Nation tweet that in a semi tweets we shared moment. There was a really funny SB Nation tweet from 2014 that they re-brought up. That it was like no World Cup matches on today. Opens up FIFA, puts a computer on both teams, and makes a game like 90 minutes. Sits down and watches.
Oh, that's amazing! I love that. We got to do that. Yes. So don't forget that these games we start tomorrow, July 10th at 2 p.m. France and Belgium. Wednesday, July 11th at 2 p.m., Croatia and England. Both games will be on Fox and Telemundo in the United States. And then our third place game, the loser of both those games, will be playing on Saturday, July 14th, 10 a.m. And then both winners of both those semifinals will be playing in the World Cup final Sunday, July 15th at 11 a.m., I will 1,000% be at some kind of soccer bar watching the World Cup final amongst people. Can I plug it, Tyler? Can I plug it?
Yeah.
My brother, Diego, we've talked about this on the pod before. He is his artistic blog, Cultural Inspector. I recently wrote an article entitled Why Every Artist Should Watch the World Cup Final. And it's basically a love letter to the sport of soccer. It's a blog post. It's not too long. But you can go ahead and check that out on culturalinspector.com. You can also find the link tweeted from our account earlier today, where I basically express why I love soccer so much and why an artist should be watching it. And in it, I'll give you a little preview. I advocate for everyone to watch the game, the World Cup final, at a soccer bar. Find the people. Hopefully in... Selfishly, I hope England make it, so that way I can go to an English pub, and then that way, if it does indeed come home, I can be amongst people that I would love to see grown Englishmen cry. Is where I'm going with that. That's the
Zach. I'm gonna FaceTime if I don't want to jinx, but if in any world England were to win this World Cup, I'm gonna FaceTime you immediately.
Okay. I think I'm going to FaceTime him first, especially if I'm at an English pub, because I want him to see that reaction. That's what will happen. That's what will happen, Zach. I hope you realize that. You'll be with your pops, and I need you to answer it. You may not. You may be celebrating. You may just be going crazy.
I'd probably go crazy. I promised myself, I said that with this tournament, I don't want to buy a new England kit unless I see a second star.
Oof. Big mood.
And I think I said it at the start, and I think I might still buy one regardless. I think that England have put in an amazing performance.
Yeah, I think regardless of what happens on Wednesday and hopefully Sunday, you should be proud of the three lines.
If they get that second star, oh my God. So, you know, I haven't sung the song. I've tried to stay away from it because I don't want to jinx it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is going to be a lot of fun, so.
I recommend that red one, because that red kit is, woof.
Yeah.
La flame. I might cop on myself. I might cop on myself.
I might get one as well.
Yeah, I might cop on myself, and I'm going to get a Raheem Sterling one. I'm going to support my boy. Get a Raheem one. Well, this has been another episode of Sideline Judgment. My name is Sergio.
My name is Tyler.
That's our boy Zach, World Cup correspondent. Please join us again later on this week when we review the semifinals and preview the third place game and, more importantly, the World Cup final. Christmas every 4 years, as I like to call it. Thank you so much. Hope you've enjoyed this episode. And we are not biased, but go England.
Come on, England!
Coming home!